Blog Talk Radio.
It's you. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I have a question for you. Do you love yourself? What would it take for you to stop being self-critical, to accept yourself with all your flaws, and finally be able to love and accept others as they are? Today you will hear some surprising revelations about the incredible power of loving one person, you. Stay tuned. Welcome to this show. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, spiritual relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the book, Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, and the romantic novel, Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of the 30-Day Love Lessons for Your Soul. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who are proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with two ladies who are creating a powerful summit. Very important topic. First, let me talk about who these people are. Stephanie Miller was formerly working in the corporate world, and she's now pursuing being an artist, meditation instructor, poet, author of The Wisdom of the Kitchen Manifesto, creator of the meditative coloring book, currently writing a book about shame and her own recovery from almost 30 years of eating disorders. Laura Biswas has an MBA from Yale, a master's in spiritual psychology, and is trained in many healing modalities. Her current work about giving and receiving love is based on her experiences with the death of three family members, childhood sexual abuse, and conscious entrepreneurship. The two ladies together have created a really powerful self-love boot camp that they'll tell you about today. So I'm delighted to welcome you, Stephanie Miller and Laura Smith-Biswas.
Hi, thank you for having us. We just consider it such an honor to be here.
Thanks, Dr. Erica. It's really a pleasure to be here and join you today on the show.
Thank you so much for joining me and for inviting me to speak on your summit as well. So I'm going to start with Laura. Please tell us a little more about your background and education and training and work experience, how you connected with Stephanie to create the Love Mandala.
Yeah, it's funny. Stephanie and I are both what we call corporate refugees. So we worked in, you know, Fortune 500 companies and had that kind of typical business background. And one day somebody came into my office that I knew and said, "You have got to meet Stephanie Miller," and she works around the corner. We worked probably like five or six offices from each other, but we're not in the same group. And, you know, finally one day Stephanie came over and said hello to me, and it was probably 90 minutes later. We were best friends, and it was sort of the end of that. We both had found that meditation and other spiritual awakening in our lives had begun, and yet we were still in the corporate world and trying to figure out how that worked together. And so we found a very, you know, true friendship immediately. And that was about 10 years ago. And I think we always felt like we were going to work together. And what happened was, Stephanie was pursuing her career as an artist. I had gone other directions and started creating businesses as an entrepreneur and gone back to school to do spiritual psychology. And I was really interested in doing work in, you know, in the field of spiritual consciousness and healing. And one day I had this experience where I had been really trying to work something out in my family with my loved ones and communicating how much I love them, and I'd really missed the mark. And it was one of those super frustrating experiences where you've tried your best and yet you feel like you just missed each other. And I was telling a friend and coach of mine, Kelly Rutley, about this experience and how, you know, frustrating it had been to not be able to communicate the love I was trying to convey. And I just got this lightning bolt of an idea that came through as, that we all have very unique ways that we like to give and receive love. And that if we could better understand that, it would really facilitate the experience of more love in our lives. And she said to me on the phone, you know, it almost sounds like you're trying to create a mandala of love. And right then, I kind of got this whole visual of what this business could be about, and that there's a real opportunity for us to share the message that it's really very loving to explore how we want to receive and give love and how those in our lives want to give and receive it. And so that was kind of the beginning of the love mandala. I called Stephanie probably like within an hour, and she felt the inspiration too. And you know, I don't know if you want to say anything about that, and off we went.
Well, I think one thing is that Laura also envisioned this with having some kind of visual expression of the way that you give and receive love, and maybe in the family setting, you know, almost like a coat of arms, except for in this case it would be a mandala.
Yeah, and we would, you know, work in, so we've done some workshops where we work in, you know, you identify how you want to be loved, and you work that into a beautiful mandala that is a representation you can hang in your home or put in your office and, you know, really help people better understand you.
So that our skills are complementary, me being an artist and Laura having the healing modalities and the master's in psychology, it's kind of a complementary partnership.
Yeah, I was thinking that as Laura was talking, I was thinking about you as the artist, you know, adding that piece in there.
There's something about the creative expression that just brings a lot of joy to the process. So it's not just an exercise to kind of dig down, but it's, you know, to heal, but it's something that, you know, can bring a lot of fun and creativity to, you know, there's something about mixing that felt really good to us. And so we wanted to bring the art into it as well.
And having that mandala, once someone creates it, it's an energy field. So each time they look at it, it gives them that love energy.
Yeah. It's interesting because when we do the workshops, we haven't specifically asked people to do this, but I have found that people do it. They go straight home from the workshop and they pull out their mandala and they show it to their, you know, roommates or their spouse or their boyfriend or girlfriend and say, you know, I discovered this thing about myself today. And it's so great that they have a visual representation and sort of a map to spark the conversation.
Wow. So the next question is, how did you go from creating these mandalas and doing the workshops to this summit, Self-Love Bootcamp?
Yeah, great question, Erica, because, you know, where's the link here? what happened is I started writing a book about all the different ways of love, and one of the things that is kind of central to the book and the way Stephanie and I both think is that self-love is the foundation for everything. So if we wanted to share the love mandala more broadly with people, we felt like it was really important to create some content around self-love and to help forward that change in the world. I think there's a lot more focus than there used to be on self-love. People are beginning to see it as a valuable asset and not something that's selfish. I think that, you know, in the past, I think sometimes people saw it as almost a selfish thing, and people are beginning to really acknowledge how important it is in the world. And yet we all I think oftentimes actually we know what we need to be more self-loving, but it's actually the practice of it and changing our habits that begins to build a better foundation for all our relationships as we relate to other people, because the way we love ourselves is the basis for, you know, every other relationship in our life and sort of reflects back to us. So we were really thrilled to be able to put together a summit with a lot of amazing speakers like you, that where people could bring their expertise and talk about different aspects of life and how to bring self-love into the equation.
And I have a question.
And I'll ask both of you that. How do you recognize if you love yourself?
Wow, what a great question. So I think actually it's more commonly in the negative where you can see that you hate yourself. I think the common experience that people have is that they have an inner critic that is with them everywhere they go, you know, 24 hours a day. And like there's little places where you can see it. Often you'll have a social conversation and you walk away from the conversation and say, why did I say that? That guy must think I'm an idiot. Or, you know, you go to a job interview and say, I forgot to tell him this. You know, there's just this kind of constant state of name calling and judging and belittling yourself that I think for a lot of people is a very natural experience. They're not aware of this harsh inner voice, and I call them the committee, by the way, that's going on inside of them. And part of the work that we do is helping people, first of all, to recognize that voice because they think it's part of them, and they also think that that voice is telling the truth. But then we also help them to redeploy that voice to do some useful work. And I actually just want to take 1 minute here to talk about a neurological thing that I think is really interesting. So the way that our brains are wired is to ensure, and I could point you to some research on this, to ensure that we are fitting in society. And there's a thing in our brain that's called the default mode. And the default mode is where our brain goes when it's not doing something else, when it's not doing math or cooking dinner or driving a car, it pops over to the default mode. And what the default mode does is checks if there's anything wrong in the environment or if you're not fitting in some way. And that was very useful when we were being hunted by lions, but not so useful when we live in an environment where we have most of the things we need and we have social acceptance. And so part of the work of self-love is learning to retrain that part of our brain that's looking for a problem and teach it to know that everything's basically okay. And the most important thing is that you're okay. There's nothing innately wrong with any of us.
Yeah, it's funny, as I sat and listened to you, I was thinking one of the ways we can really, and not in a critical way, but just kind of look for opportunities with our self-love is to check how worthy we feel of receiving. Because very often one of the signs is that we give and give and give, and yet we're not letting in return because there's a level of unworthiness that we're sensing, that we feel that isn't real, but we, you know, naturally buy into that in our enculturation. And so it could show up as how we take care of ourselves physically. Do we get enough sleep? Are we able to set boundaries so that we can, you know, we don't overdo it with our families or work? Have we pursued our own dreams, or are we just sitting in the background and letting everybody else take the lead in our lives? Are we feeling worthy of just asking for what we want in relationships, you know? So those things can all be signs. And I think as you work with the critical voice, then you start to see the next level. It's like, okay, so maybe I start to get on solid ground and I'm starting to be more as gentle to myself as I am to my friends. That might be somewhere to start working towards. And then we can begin to look at, like, are we allowing ourselves to expand? Are we supporting ourselves to, you know, self-actualize in an area of our life and kind of go from there? I mean, we're not going to work on everything at once, but there's so many places that self-love shows up in our lives.
A really simple one is just how you accept compliments. really, really simple.
Sure.
When somebody says you look great to you, you know, just, I had a friend say to me once, the only appropriate response is thank you. But it points at that unworthiness thing. If you notice how you respond to someone saying, you look great. Oh, no, I don't. I didn't.
I remember someone many, many years ago when I was single telling me, you know, I really like you or something like that. And I kept saying, no, you don't. And then it was really funny. Then finally he said, okay, I don't really like you. It was just funny to hear myself do that.
Yeah, and for your listeners, this is a really, really important point that you just brought up, that someone said that they liked you and you completely missed the feeling of enjoying having someone like you because of your own sense of unworthiness. So if you can just embrace and feel that feeling, and I often try to take a compliment down to my heart center and just allow it to come in.
That's beautiful. So there's another question here. You know, you're not always feeling confident. So what happens when you feel fear or doubt? You know, how do you cope with that if you're loving yourself?
Yeah, well, those are classic forms of resistance, you know, to expanding into what we want in life. And we all experience them. They're so human. And maybe we could each talk about, you know, one or the other.
Talk about fear. I'll talk about fear.
Okay. So as far as what I found with doubt was, you know, particularly, I'll give you an example, Dr. Erica, when one of my entrepreneurial ventures, it was building a consulting company from the ground up and with my husband. And as we'd never done anything like that, you know, we'd worked in corporate America, but it was a new venture. And as I stepped into that, I became, you know, a leader, and there were all kinds of new things we had to learn to grow into, you know, a bigger company, you know, with that was successful. And it's in its ninth year now, so it's done very well.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some real ups and downs along the way. And what I found was sometimes I would just have incredible doubt about rising to the challenge that would be in front of me. And I began to recognize a pattern that I had a pattern of just doubting myself every step of the way. And once I saw that pattern, I was able to say, like, okay, that's not real. It's not actually a real thing. There's no reason. Other people have done this. I can do this too. But I had to really exercise a new muscle to work with the doubt and recognize what was the story I was telling myself. Maybe I didn't have enough experience in some area, or maybe this or that, and go work and really reframe that story. So that's one of the tools that I would use with doubt, is to identify what's the limiting belief that's behind the doubt. You know, maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe I don't know what the client's going to need. Maybe, you know, I don't know how to show up in this relationship. It could be anything. And then it's like, well, what could the reframe on that story be? The reframe might be in a relationship that, well, it's a discovery process. I don't need to know everything about this new relationship to be successful, but I can take the first step and open up to discovering what it's about and what I have to bring, and kind of go back and say, what do I have to bring to this relationship? What are the things that I know about myself that are assets and that are very loving? And you go back to the positive and say, I don't have to have it all figured out. Let's go forward. And you try, address it and take another step.
I'd like to react to this with a few things. One of them is that the limiting belief, and I've had it for a very long time, and finally I think I'm letting it go, is that you have to know everything before you know it.
Right.
So
yeah.
You have to be good at it. So that's why you don't want to ask questions, because you don't want to appear like you don't know something, appear stupid, so you can't find out the information, and that makes you so anxious. Where instead of saying, I just don't know it yet, I'm new at this, that was
right.
One thing I reacted to, that belief. The other thing that I was very aware of the other day, I've been listening to on Sirius XM, the Frank Sinatra station, and I love listening to it because they have all these great singers on there, all the, you know, icons from years ago. But somebody said something about Frank Sinatra. He was an individual, you know, he did it his way. He spoke up. He didn't just give in. And I thought about his background from whatever I know of it.
He had older sisters and women all around him, and everyone loved him, and he was made special. So he probably felt he could just do anything. But most of us don't feel that way. We're held back in some way. So I just had to add that piece.
Before I talk about fear, I just want to make one comment on that, because what you're talking about is perfectionism. That feeling, and that, you know, there's a lot of shame in our culture that arises from our own perfectionism and that idea that we should have already mastered whatever it is we're talking about. And I always joke that I was one of those people that if you set me down in the operating room for brain surgery, I would expect myself to be able to know how to be a brain surgeon, because that's just the way that one of my committee speaks to me, like, you should know this, you should know how to do this. And I think it's a very important thing to pause and say, why should I know how to do this? I've never done it before. And the only way that the human brain learns is by failing. So, you know, we have this backwards equation in our head. I did want to answer your question about fear, though. So I, my framework of my worldview is that many of us are raised in what I call the doctrine of basic badness. So we're raised with the idea that there's some problem within us that needs to be fixed. In some traditions, that's sin. In some traditions, it's just the idea that we're unformed and we have to be shaped and formed. There's the nature and nurture conversation, where if you don't nurture a kid in the right direction, they'll end up going off the rails. However you want to look at that equation, that idea of the basic badness inside of us is sort of this poison that is not helpful to the human experience. And it is my belief that we are all basically good, that there is nothing innately wrong inside of us. We are perfect, whole, and complete. We have everything we need just as we are in this moment. There's nothing needed to be added or fixed or repaired or changed. And I think that once we finally grasp that truth, which, by the way, I just think is a primordial truth. You can argue with me or not. I just happen to believe that it is the truth. Once you grasp that truth, you then have the confidence to have real bravery. And, you know, often people think that fear is pushing away the thing you're afraid of. But in fact, bravery is riding into. So it's that old image of the knight turning and facing the dragon, you know, sword in hand, or the warrior entering battle, knowing that death is a real possibility. And the only way that you can do that is by having that primordial confidence that you're fine. No matter what happens, you're okay. And just my one more minute of neurological science. So what makes up a sense of self-esteem is your reputation and your self-image, if you can picture that as a little Venn diagram, where those two intersect is where confidence resides. And as long as you hold on to that basic badness doctrine, you're missing that piece, and all you can hang on to is your reputation or approval from the outside world. And that is not a solid foundation for self-esteem. And then you will always be afraid and unable to ride into battle and be brave.
Wow, that is powerful.
Easy metaphor.
I'm going to ask another question. Stephanie, you're writing a book on recovering from shame. So can you tell us what inspired you to write about overcoming your own shame and why it's so important to recover from these feelings of shame?
Thank you for asking. There is no purpose in this world that I think is more important for me than helping people to be relieved from shame. And the reason I decided to write this book is I was having what I call the hallway experience, I didn't know what the next thing was, and I always describe the hallway. It's like those hallways in hospitals that don't have any windows or doors, and they're all the same color. And I was between things, and I didn't know what my next step was. And I had dinner with one of my girlfriends, and I told her about the hallway, and she said, "Oh, yeah, I know the hallway." And she said, "The only way out of the hallway is to decide what the single most important thing for you to do in your lifetime and do it." And she said, "What's yours?" And I said, "Well, I suffered from eating disorders for almost 30 years, and my eating disorders were fueled by shame. I was a bulimic and anorexic and a compulsive overeater from the time I was a teenager on. Well, I think really from the time I was born, but it really became acute starting in my teenage years." And I said, "The thing that relieved me from my eating disorders was recognizing my shame, which was recognizing that idea in my head that I was basically a problem, that there was innately something wrong with me that needed to be fixed, and doing work, lots of work, like 10 years of work on rooting out that kind of thinking and replacing it with a healthy worldview. And over the course of the years, therapy, friends, eating disorder clinics, support groups, books, tapes, classes,
everything.
Could just go on and on. I sort of picked up the greatest hits of my favorite tools is really what I put down, the things that I learned on that journey that I really wanted to share with other people. So that's why I am writing, have almost written, you can see me crossing my fingers here, this book on recovering from shame.
And what does shame have to do with self-love, just briefly?
I think shame is the idea that you are innately a problem, that there's something innately wrong with you, and self-love is the recognition that you are innately good and lovable and there's nothing wrong.
Yeah, and you know, Dr. Erica, if I can jump in as it relates to my experience with sexual abuse and trauma, my experience with shame was this very deep-seated experience from being a child and thinking there was something wrong with me because I was identified as, you know, to be a participant in that kind of an activity. And I think what I learned over time in a way, and this might not be true for everyone's experience, but for mine, there was a family dynamic of abuse going on intergenerationally, and what I was able to get to is that when you are in an experience like that, the person who is perpetrating that kind of thing is actually passing their shame to you. And as a child, I just took it thinking it was mine to hold. And part of the process of reclaiming myself and my knowing that there's nothing wrong with me was to say, it's time to give it back. And that's part of what I will do when it pops up again in my present life. It's not mine. You take it back.
Nice.
And it's just a mantra.
Wow. Wow. So Laura, share with us your self-love practices. That sounds like one that make a real difference for you.
Yeah. And you know, a really simple one I've been using a lot lately when things have come up is you can feel when your vibrations kind of shift. You start to feel bad about something. I'll try to turn it around immediately and just put my hand on my heart and remember that I am made up of love, and love is all there is, that I come from, whether you want to call it God, source, or, you know, whatever it is you believe in, that I come from that, and there's nothing wrong with me, and everything's going to be okay, and I'll just stay and try to move into my heart until that feeling shifts. And it's like developing a muscle. It's just something I'm in a lot of deep practice with right now, but I'm finding that really self-loving to just turn that feeling around as quickly as I can when I feel it come over me.
Wow, beautiful. I created a 30-day love challenge, and it's really 30 love lessons for your soul. And one of the lessons is about self-love. But I found that as I was creating that course, each time I left the house, I went to a restaurant or anywhere, supermarket, I became so much more loving toward people because I was so aware of it. We forget and we get caught up in ourselves.
Yeah. Well, that's how compassion arises, right? Is from our own experience of loving ourselves.
All right, so Stephanie, share with us your self-love practices.
I'd like to share two, but I'll make it snappy. The first one is one that I did for about 2 years on the beginning of my self-love journey. And I just an apology to your listeners. After I tell you how to do this, I'm just going to admit that you probably are going to hate and curse me for some time until you understand the power of this practice. So I understand that. Forgive me. So it was suggested to me that I look in the mirror, look myself in the eyes, and say, I love you, Stephanie. I could not do that for a long time, but I tried every day until I could and now can anytime I want and look myself directly in the eyes. So I think that's kind of the triage practice. And then in terms of my ongoing daily practice, for me, there is nothing more powerful to make friends with myself than meditation. And just that making some time every day and spending a few minutes calmly following my breath and being in the present moment and relaxing is what has really led me to see the real nature of my mind and to love myself.
Oh, that's beautiful. I've also recently reconnected with something called HoloSync, especially for people who are not comfortable meditating. This is you wear a headset and listen to these sounds that have that same effect as meditation by affecting your brain.
You know, I just want to say here, in the self-love boot camp that we interviewed you for, we have a couple of really, really good interviews on the topic of meditation. And
oh, that's great.
Yeah, so if people sign up for the Self-Love Bootcamp, they'll have access to those interviews. And they'll actually get an email that pings them on the day we're talking about meditation.
Yeah, you can watch. The emails will let you know what they're about. And there were a lot of great speakers talking about handling fear as well. That was another topic that came through really strong because I think a lot of people are working with that.
Fear and anxiety, I think. Yeah. And actually, the other thing is every day we ask the experts what their self-love practice is.
So there's so many great ideas.
So many great tools, and actually I've already started using some of them because I was like, wow, that's a great one. I'm going to do that.
I know, same here.
And one of my favorite interviews, there's a great one on intuition, which also has a lot to do with self-love. A tool for intuition. So,
wow, you know, and each person has their whole life experience and their unique techniques. So it's beautiful.
Yeah, we feel very honored that you joined us too, for Dr. Erica. Your interview is fantastic. I know everybody listening will want to hear it as well.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, it's wonderful. I'm looking forward to hearing what these other speakers have to say. So is there anything you can offer our listeners, and how can they get in touch with you?
So the best way to get in touch with us is to go to our website. There's a place to sign up for our newsletter, and forgive us for our technical challenges. We should be returning a free gift when you sign up for the newsletter. We just haven't hooked up that capability. But now that we're on the radio, we're going to get that done. And then
that's great.
TheLoveMandala.com.
That's at TheLoveMandala.com. And two things I want to say about that. One is we have a page there. We would love for you to share with us how you like to give and receive love. And there's a page on our navigation that says share, and just send us a little email or send us any kind of reply that you want. And then, of course, we have the Self-Love Bootcamp as a free gift, and they can go to theselflovebootcamp.com and sign up.
And I have a link on this page. So anyone
fantastic.
Who came to this radio show, the link is here for that.
Yeah, so
but I would
like
you
you'll get the expert tour, access to our 30 experts, an amazing conversation about money, body image, fear, doubt, anxiety,
love, sex, everything.
Yeah, everything. Yeah, we've really covered everything. We even have a stand-up comedian as one of our guests.
I know. How unique is that?
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
I want to just add that you're not talking about fear and anxiety for the purpose of that. You're talking about that to show how that gets in the way of self-love.
Right.
And
absolutely.
How to overcome it. It's not
yeah, exactly,
to add to your fear and anxiety.
Yeah, and I just,
so
you know,
like
what
you
I just want to say, because you did ask the
yes.
question about shame, is
yes.
I think shame is often what I call a secret saboteur. We encounter these things, maybe the big job promotion or the great relationship or, you know, the house of our dreams, and we do things to sabotage them, and we don't understand why we do that. And the reason that we do that is because of our shame and often our unconscious shame. We just blow things up because we don't think we're worthy of, you know, this amazing gift. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, the recovery from shame allows you to accept those things with ease and grace.
Beautiful. So I wanted to give your two URLs again for your website.
Yeah, thelovemandala.com and theselflovebootcamp.com. And actually, you can find the boot camp on the Love Mandala page also.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a lot of ways to get to it.
Yeah.
So thank you to both of you so much for participating in the radio interview. And I'm excited about your boot camp, and I'm sure our listeners will be too.
Thank you for joining us, Dr. Erica.
Yeah, thanks. It really was such an honor for us to be here. And we didn't mention, but we're launching the Love Mandala on February 14th. So the summit coincides with launching the formal business and the website. And so it's really, we really appreciate having your support and for you sharing our website with your listeners and just introducing us. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And it will be all over social media. So
thank you, Dr. Erica.
It'll be out there. And
thank you.
That's exciting. You're welcome. Thank you. And I didn't know that you were launching your business at the same time. Wonderful.
Yeah.
So I look forward to seeing all these wonderful interviews. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, healthybabyboomersnetwork.com, to get your free report, How to Live to 100 and Beyond and Be Healthy and Happy. And if you're ready to create lasting love, click the link to the 30 Love Lessons for the Soul at my other website, drericagoodstone.com. I look forward to speaking to you again soon.